May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Today we're celebrating the feasts of St. Basil the Great and St. Gregory Nazianzen, two of the great Cappadocian fathers, and I promised to talk about the third of them, St. Gregory of Nyssa, this morning. So here we go, and this is why I'm recording this sermon at the request of our webmaster. Well, St. Basil the Great was the older brother of Gregory of Nyssa, and he was a plus personality, a person with great leadership ability, and a person who was unafraid of intense church politics and contestation. And Gregory of Nyssa was his younger brother. And rather like Gregory of Nazianzus, he was the shy, retiring, scholarly type. And what's a little bit unusual compared to the other two is that although very impressed by the ideals of Christian asceticism, Gregory of Nyssa was rather more influenced by women. He loved his sister Macrina, who went on to become a saint. At least three of this remarkable family, if not four of them, became saints. Can you be naughty and be a saint? It must have been a really interesting childhood time playing together, that remarkable family. And Gregory went on to become the Bishop of Nyssa, and rather like Gregory of Nazianzus, found the exercise of hard power, the fact that, you know, all the hard decisions land on your desk difficult. Unlike his brother, who was rather outspoken and an unafraid controversialist, Gregory of Nyssa was always trying for compromise solutions, trying to get people together to come to some kind of a consensus. Not always, I may add, with a great deal of success. But that was the difference in his style. He was there at the Council of Constantinople that I talked about this morning, that defined the status of the Holy Spirit and enshrined the doctrine of the Trinity in the faith of the Church and its creed. But really, what he did as a bishop, or what he did in turning up to significant occasions, is not what's added him to the list of the three great brains of the 4th century Eastern Orthodox, Eastern Church. It's his writings. And really, he was overshadowed by the other two in his lifetime. Gregory of Nazianzus was the great orator, the one who made a considerable influence in the life of the Church by his theological writing. Basil was the great leader. And it wasn't until many years later, perhaps in the 20th century, that Gregory of Nyssa has come into his own and has been really appreciated, with many now saying that he's the most original thinker of the three. Well, what's aroused a lot of the interest is that some people believe he taught the doctrine of universal salvation, that all shall return to the Father and be received into the life of heaven. That's a contested point, and I don't intend to spend a great deal of time on it. Just to say this, the three great Cappadocian fathers had been deeply influenced by the first great systematic theologian, Origen. And Origen certainly did believe in universal salvation. He believed that all of us were pre-existent souls who kind of cascaded down from the light of heaven at the fall to the earth, which is a great catechetical saving teaching instrument by God, so that we may ascend unto the Father again. And that God was prepared to take all the time required, even for his aeons, to educate us back into the life of God. Well, that's not quite what Gregory believed. And I don't intend to... He did believe, though, that people would be purged by fire. There would be a process for healing and purification for those who hadn't had a chance for salvation. That it was important that people were purged of their sinlessness to return to the Father. But his real point of contribution is that... Well, there's several ones. First of all, what goes on in the life of heaven? You know, there's the character view of you that we're all going to sit on clouds and pluck harps. Images of rest and repose. Gregory puts it very differences with his notion of epectasis. That sense of straining forward, as St. Paul talks about it. The sense that in the light, God's an inexhaustible reality, incomprehensible. We shall spend the rest of eternity trying to satisfy our curiosity about God. It'll be a journey of continuing exploration. We'll be drawn further and further into the mystery, our curiosity aroused further and further, as though heaven's a kind of institute, an advanced research institute. And in that sense, it's a dynamic process of trying to come further and further into the heart of God and to understand all the secrets of the universe that he has made. That's the first thing. The second thing is that the The notion of our journey into God, taught by the mystics, taught by doctors of the church, taught by religious, has been within a framework rather Neoplatonic that Gregory himself taught, and it's the three-stage journey to God. In the first stage of our journey to God, there's what's called the purgative state, in which God rids us of false notions of what spiritual progress is, rids us of false notions of who he is, rids us of notions of what the path to union with God is all about. Then there's the second stage, the unitive stage, the illuminative stage, in which the deep mysteries of God, the doctrines of God, the story about who God is and what he does and how he draws us to him becomes illuminated by divine grace. We come to understand these things much more at a far deeper level. And then finally, we're drawn into union with God through what St. John of the Cross called at first the dark night of the soul. The senses, the rational intellect, no longer serve us. We come into the heart of the mystery of God and are drawn here. Those things pass away, and now we are close to God beyond anything that we are striving achieves. God has come to rest within us in this kind of, this sense of loving, intimate union in which all our attempts to come to understand have been surpassed. This is what the mystical path to God is all about. And Gregory is the one who first conceives of this way, this path to God. He also believes that, in a sense, God is incomprehensible, will never get fully to understand him completely. And that's different from what Thomas Aquinas believed. He believed that in the end, we shall contemplate God, we shall see him as he is. To which those who follow the path of St. Gregory of Nyssa said, well, that's surely impossible. Remember when Moses ascends the mountain and God says, I'm going to put you in the rock and you'll only see the hinder parts of me as I pass. Thomas Aquinas said God will heal and elevate our organs of perception so that we can see God. He will, as it were, enable us to see him after his progress coming close to us. Anyway, that's I think all these images of the life of heaven are very useful to us. Gregory of Nyssa was also the only one of the patristic fathers to denounce slavery. The only one who unhesitatingly and without any reservations said that slavery was a great evil. And remember, the thing about slavery is it's the engine that drives society in the ancient world. That which our electric energy slaves do for us, slaves did for them. To live a comfortable life, to make the engines of the economy work, you had to have slaves. Gregory, nevertheless, to his great credit, is the only person to see what a monstrous evil this was and to declare it a great evil. Spoken in the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.